The race for the Arras is about to begin. Midday today is the moment that the campaign proper gets underway. And from here on in, every poster, every debate, every social media clip and every handshake matters. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. So the starting gun is fired. Can you hear the excitement in my voice? We're going to be taking a look at the contenders in next month's presidential election. Who's got the star power? Who's already stumbling? And who might just surprise us before polling day? And beyond the candidates themselves, we're going inside the anatomy of a modern presidential campaign, the media set pieces, the poster wars, the transfer strategies, and what really makes a difference when voters finally cast their ballots. In a few minutes, I'm going to be joined by Teresa Reedy, the election guru. But first, let's go to Gerard Howland. And Gerard, as many of you know, is a public affairs consultant, political advisor, and you'll also find him writing columns for the Irish Times. You're very welcome to the podcast, Gerard.
Thank you, Ciara.
I don't want to get too personal here because I know there's been so much criticism of the media and how they cover these presidential campaigns that it is too focused really on the personality of the individual. But how do you rate the offering, Gerard?
It's not fantastically inspiring, frankly. But the reason there's so much focus on the character and personality is because what you're looking at is the caliber of a president who does not have executive power, who is not in a position to implement policy, but whose job is to uphold the constitution, to represent the country, and to speak of us and for us over the next 7 years. And that does come down to personality and character. And that's why that emphasis is there. Sometimes slightly squalidly, sometimes unfairly, but it is the obvious quality you're looking for, president, unlike a possible TD. The TD, you want to know what they're doing on this or that or school fees. The president, you want to know how they will stand for you as president over years.
Yeah, and the best way to tell that is to look at past performance, isn't it? And that's why we go back over their past and the decisions that they've made and the things that they have stood for and the things that they have said.
Yes, I mean, it's a job interview with the biggest possible panel of people in interviewing you. Because in a general election, the largest number of people voting are confined to one single constituency. This is the only national election in which all of us, every Irish citizen, votes on a choice of a person to hold an office, the highest office in the land.
Okay, let's look at their strengths and some of their weaknesses. We'll start with Catherine Connolly.
Catherine Connolly is, I suppose, what I would describe as a very traditional, very solid left politician. She has very distinctive views. She's pretty uncompromising. She has a great grasp of Irish. She can be very fluent. But at the same time, she's had a number of poor interviews. And the paradox for me about Catherine Connolly is this: having seen her in action in Oireachtas committees over the years, she's very good at putting people to the question. She seems to have been less able to answer the question, face the questions that have been put to her on more than one occasion. In relation to her association with Mick Wallace, Claire Daly, former MEPs, trips to Syria, her views on Russia, in a way, it's helpful for her that all of this has been gotten out very early. Because what you can be assured of, Ciara, is most people are not focusing on this now. Is it still some time to go before there will be a real focus on this by the vast majority of people who will ultimately vote and thereby make the decision? So this campaign is still very much future tense.
Yeah, I mean, I know you say that she has answered those questions, and I actually heard a political correspondent on the radio at the weekend saying, yeah, I think we can draw a line under that because she has been asked about it repeatedly. And I have to say, I disagreed. I thought, no, people will tune into her answers come those TV or radio debates, and then we'll really get a sense if she can draw a line under some of those questions.
And remember, you know, in a court case, if you or I were witnesses in a court case, swearing under oath our evidence, part of the basis on which a judge or jury will judge us is our demeanour, the cut of our character, not just the words we say, but are they believed to be credible? And it's no different. We, the people, are looking at the presidential candidates debating on television or on radio.
As somebody who spent a lot of time in a TV studio at one point, I'd like to just reassure any News Talk Daily listeners that we do not ask them to swear on the Bible before we talk to them. But maybe, Jared, maybe you're onto something there. Okay, let's look at Heather Humphreys. What are her strengths and weaknesses?
She has been in cabinet until the last election since 2014. She was in the Dáil since 2011. She's been in several government departments. She has what I would call gumption. She's a tough player bureaucratically inside the system. She knows it inside out. She's handled herself very well politically over the years. But curiously, she's handled herself very well over the years by being careful about what she says. As you know, as a long-time interviewer on political television, Heather Humphreys was very sparing in the amount of time she gave on air as a minister. Mm-hmm. And I think she used that to good effect. She cannot really do that for the next few weeks. And how she handles it live on the stump and on air will be a big test.
And that has been some of the criticism that has been levied at her over the years, that when you threw things to her that she wasn't expecting, like, for example, the Orange Order question at her launch a few weeks ago, that she does wobble there, that that's not where she comes into her own. Moving on to Jim Gavin, I mean, a very well-known name, but perhaps in some ways the great unknown going into this presidential election.
He is, and he's frankly, he's unknown to me. I'm not quite sure why he's running for president, but I'm all eyes, I'm all ears. I'm really eager to find out and to know. What hasn't been said or explained or come across is a synergy, how the different parts of his life story come together to be a candidate for president. He's less than the sum of his considerable parts in this campaign so far, and it's up to him quickly to put that right and tell us why he should be president.
I have to say, one of the things I've really noticed about any of his outings to date is the way the Fianna Fáil party, particularly the leader, seem to hover beside him as if they aren't completely confident that they can just let him off on his own to face the media and to answer those questions. Their nervousness is making me nervous.
The glare of the camera, 5, 10, 15 reporters. Beyond them are a couple of other people maybe having a shout or a roar or a jibe at you, and dealing with it coming from all quarters, hot and heavy, all day, every day, for weeks on end. You really need to have your wits about you, and nothing much prepares you for that except previous campaigns and actual experience. And coming through this without any previous experience or indeed of media, it is actually tough. Facing down a couple of reporters and every word being recorded, and what you said an hour ago, yesterday, and what you said 10 years ago. And by the way, I can't remember much of what I said 10 years ago.
Can't remember much of what I said 10 minutes ago most days. Jared Hyland, I'm sure I'll speak to you over the next couple of weeks.
Ciara, lovely to chat. Thank you.
Okay, let's look forward to how the next 4 weeks are likely to play out and shape up and highlight some of the banana skins to watch out for as the campaign proper gets underway. Professor Teresa Reedy teaches at the School of Government in UCC. She's also the co-editor of How Ireland Voted series of books. And let's face it, Teresa, there's nothing you don't know about presidential elections.
Well, that's very kind. It's lovely to be here talking about them.
So, as somebody who has watched, followed, commentated and written extensively about presidential elections and elections in general in Ireland, is there any sort of formula to doing well and ultimately succeeding in this campaign?
I think it kind of depends on what type of candidate you are. These are really different elections. They're really intense. They're focused on a handful of candidates, and they're also very personalised. So they're very different to local elections when we have 2,000 candidates, or even the general election where you'll have 500 or 600 candidates. So all of the attention and all of the focus is on everything to do with that handful of people. And the other thing then is, because it's the You're going to the Áras, it's the presidency. You don't have a policy platform. You're not going to be implementing any changes in policy or changing any laws. So at the end of the day, it all boils down to what you'll be like as a president. You know, you might have a theme or a kind of a loose set of objectives that you might want to achieve, but it's mostly kind of in a general way that they campaign. This can be quite a brutal and bruising campaign. And several people over the years have spoken about how they came out of it, you know, quite battered, and that it took them a couple of years to recover.
Oh, they're still carrying the scars. A lot of them, I would say, personal scars of their experience and journey through a presidential campaign.
And these are people who are very eminent in their own fields. And that's the other thing. You really shouldn't go near a presidential election unless you're somebody that has really very significant experience in public life. And it doesn't always have to be in politics, but in public life. And you're used to that scrutiny and the glare of the media. But while we say the president has few roles, they have a handful of roles that are really very important. Should that moment arise, you want a president who can actually resist and can bear intense scrutiny and can make a critical judgment on behalf of the state. The campaign is a type of endurance test, and if you come out the other end of it, well, then maybe you do have what it takes. I think in a way it's the absolute reverse of, you know, those financial ads that tell you past performance is no predictor of future.
Exactly.
But actually it's the other way around here. Mm. Past performance is quite likely to be a predictor of what this person will be like in the future. I suppose the other thing is, when we look back over the kind of presidents that have been elected over the decades, don't have a lot of polling, but certainly we do in more recent years, voters, they act very carefully and shrewdly. And the people who've left office as president, quite unusually for politicians, have generally left with very high support ratings. So oftentimes they become more popular over the course of their term. So what you're going to be like and building that connection with the electorate, it matters a lot. But I haven't answered your question, though, which is kind of how do you approach the campaign? It matters a lot what kind of candidate you are. You know, if you're a party candidate, and you've got one of the big ones behind you, you're probably a politician to start with, or have some kind of big political profile. And so you can come into the race and campaign for that kind of 6 or 7 weeks. But if you're an independent candidate, first of all, your route onto the ballot paper is a good deal more complicated. But most successful independents do have to come into the race a good bit earlier. I mean, Mary Robinson famously came in the spring in 1990 and began her campaign around the country. And so they are quite different types of elections, and there are quite different requirements depending on how well known you are to start with, and also whether or not you have a big political party behind you.
Building that connection, you've said there a few times how important that is to have that with the electorate. How do you go about building that connection? Like, is it in Ireland about getting out there, going to the events, pressing the flesh, or is it about ruling the airwaves?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, in general, I think the presidential campaign is much more focused on the airwaves. I mean, because you can't meet everybody in the country. So there isn't door-to-door canvassing and going around meeting people, you know, outside church gates and things like that. But you do engage in kind of high-impact events. So how you could be a presidential candidate and not be at the ploughing match. It's one of the biggest events in Europe, not to mind. In Ireland, there are 250,000 people there. If you're leading into this and you're an aspiring presidential candidate, you have a summer of festivals and events and picnics, and a presidential candidate wants to be going to all of those things, every agricultural show, the RDS horse show. You need to traverse, you need rural and you need urban. You need to go across the age demographics. So you might want to be at the Electric Picnic. Electric Picnic is probably a middle-aged festival at this stage, but you definitely want to be picking up some of the younger ones as well. So it's not a case of where you don't engage with people one-to-one, but you simply can't engage on kind of small-scale canvassing. So it has to be about hitting big events, big sporting events. But then you have to rule the airwaves. And since 2018, and maybe even a little bit in 2011, you have digital media, but social media, you have to be on the socials. You have to be projecting yourself. And nowadays, you also have to be comfortable on the social media. And I think sometimes we overstate, we talk a lot about age in relation to that. Some people are very, I mean, Michael D. Higgins was a master between his photobombing of people's photographs. Like, he was a master of using that medium carefully and creatively. They need to be in that space.
Okay, so if somebody asks you for a selfie, you better give it.
Absolutely. And you better suggest a good angle so that you take it the right way. And you have to have the trick of the politicians reaching over, giving a little brush, say, oh, you look lovely now, and turning. I mean, that's what it is to be a politician. That's what it is to be warm, to engage with the voters. And if you want a top job in the land, you need to be par excellence at that, you know?
Okay, so I'm expecting all of the PR heads that have been brought in to control these campaigns to be walking around with their ring light in their pocket, just ready for that social media moment. I'm joking here, but actually there is some truth in that. What about posters? The old traditional signal that there was an election underway in the country was the posters went up. Are they as important in a presidential election as they are in the local or the general elections?
I'm not sure they're as important. Like, posters have a couple of functions. And the first thing is that they alert people that there's an election coming. So apparently there are people out there that don't listen to political podcasts and like news every day. I know, I'm
shocked too.
And
horrified, missing out.
For people who apparently they do exist, posters are very important. You know, they talk with their kids on the way to school about the election that's coming up. And so they alert people to an election. And there's very tentative research. Actually, some of those areas that tend to ban posters, turnout can actually be a little lower. Now, it's very early, but you know, there are indications that in a practical way, they do matter. And at local and general elections, they're probably that bit more important because there are more candidates. And they're a way, especially for new candidates, to alert their voters that they're on the ballot. That's a bit less the case in the presidential election. I mean, these candidates are going to be absolutely everywhere for the next 4 weeks. So you're not going to miss them. And it's probably not going to be a surprise to you that, you know, who's on the ballot paper. So in 2018, quite a few of the candidates actually decided that they weren't going to run poster campaigns. But still in all, a lot of them had banners on motorways. And so there's a bit of a trade-off. I think there's a bit more space in a presidential election to not use posters. But I'd be surprised if some of them, you know, don't have them up there just to remind voters. And it comes back to this thing of how you campaign. Some of them probably will have themes and they'll have those captured on the posters. And so it's kind of building that connection and reinforcing it as you go through. The country won't be bedecked in the same way that it was in June of last year, where really you couldn't move for the sight of a poster.
You go out for a walk and you were getting whacked if there was any kind of breeze by one swinging on a pole. Now, it will surprise absolutely nobody listening to hear that I love a political debate. I am one of those nerds that gets the popcorn in, makes sure the kids are in bed early, and I'm sitting down to watch the TV debates, or I've actually set an alarm because I know there's a good radio debate happening with all of the candidates present. I really enjoy those. Do they matter, Teresa?
Well, you know, usually we say, oh, debates matter in different ways. I mean, academics always hedge and you kind of say it's not the knockout blow, but actually
it can be.
In presidential elections, they're more likely to generate knockout blows than in other types of debates. Debates always matter because they're a focal point for the campaign. And often they book in the campaign. You get kind of a debate at the start of the campaign. All the big broadcasters will do one-on-one interviews. And they're a way of introducing the candidates to the voters and saying who they are. And then people talk about the debates the following day. So it's maybe not so much about what was said or done during the debate, but it's bringing attention to the election. And then as we get closer to the end, you get more pressure. Candidates get tired and the conditions are there for, you know, quite testy exchanges. And so presidential debates matter that little bit more. There are far fewer people on the stage. There aren't going to be a handful of people on the stage.
And you can really see the whites of their eyes, can't
you?
There's nowhere to hide. And it creates an atmosphere, doesn't it?
I think it creates that kind of intensity and the focus. And again, it's different in the general election. So we had the three party leaders in the big debate, but they came armed with manifestos and each one of them had 70 candidates standing behind them. And so they've got all of this material that they can draw on. But in a presidential election debate, it's you. you alone are the product. And I think that's what kind of amplifies that kind of significance of the debates, because you're effectively offering yourself as the product. You don't have a manifesto.
You don't have policies.
You don't have policies. You don't have candidates in all the constituencies. You don't have a track record in office. So it really does come down to who you are and how you are and what you would be like. And so it's a very different dynamic. And it does mean that the questions tend to be much more personal. They tend to be much more focused. And that's maybe what creates the conditions where these debates tend to be a little bit more interesting in the presidential election.
If you look at presidential campaigns of the past, those front runners, those favourites, tend to have a habit of falling back off course, if not falling way off course altogether by the final
vote. And two cautionary tales are 1990 and 2011. I mean, the dynamic is there in all of them. But in 1990, Mary Robinson was not expected to win that election. In fact, nobody but a Fianna Fáil candidate had ever won a presidential election up to that time. But events in the course of the campaign, and I only barely remember because I was still very young in 1990, but it was genuinely a wild campaign. You know, the implosion of the Fianna Fáil campaign.
That was Brian Lenihan Sr. and the famous phone call to President Hillary.
And whether it did happen or it didn't happen. And it was also probably more about how he dealt with that scandal and then how Fianna Fáil dealt with it in the wider picture. And so the whole campaign just imploded and Mary Robinson swept very unexpectedly to victory in 2011. Again, there was a more unusual race. Fianna Fáil weren't actually in the campaign. Sean Gallagher was a businessman, very well known, was running, but kind of almost as a proxy Fianna Fáil candidate. And then the campaign kind of started pulling him back into Fianna Fáil debates. Remember, this is right in the middle of the crash. And he lost his front runner status and Michael D. Higgins slipped in and got a huge vote in the end. And so events in the course of the campaign really did matter. And at various stages, actually, in 2011, different people looked like they were going to win.
David Norris was the initial standout favourite in that race.
His campaign imploded and he left the race and then re-entered the race. So these tend to be very dramatic kind of campaigns.
Michael D took almost 56% of first preferences back in 2018. He absolutely romped home. But this time, and I hate using this cliche because we're going to hear it time and time again, but I think it will be true, transfers are going to be everything.
Oh, transfers are going to be crucial this time around. I mean, in 2018, we need to remember that Michael D Higgins was actually an immensely popular incumbent. And it's quite rare, actually, that incumbent presidents have to face elections. It was only the second time ever that happened. And all of the other big political parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, stayed out of the race. Sinn Féin put in a candidate, but she wasn't very well known. And so Michael D Higgins faced a kind of group of candidates, whatever their own individual merits, they were nowhere near as well known as he was. And he simply just wiped the electoral plate clean. This time around, it's very different. I'm not sure that actually it's going to be who is leading in the first preference votes at the start. It's who's going to have the transfers to get them over the line. And that's where I think the intense competition between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael is going to be very, very interesting. Because looking at the field right now, it looks like the numbers between the two of them exceed the rest of the field. And so it's whoever comes out in front. Unfortunately for that person, it's the other one behind them. There's potential to elect them. So Gavin could elect Humphreys, or Humphreys could elect Gavin. But that's what it looks like right now. 4 weeks from here, we don't know what the shape of those two candidacies is going to be like.
Turnout was really low too, wasn't it, in 2018? It was only 44%. I would expect it to be higher this time, given the fact that we are going to get a brand new president out of this, come what may.
I think, yeah, there are reasons to think it will go up, which is, you know, there'll be that more intense competition and you have the bigger parties are in play here as well. So that will help in terms of bringing out partisans. And I think it's not a foregone conclusion. I mean, we don't know. We think transfers will matter, but we don't know exactly who will elect whom. And so it does matter if you vote. Two things probably we would caution against. One is turnout dropped, actually, at the general election. So there is the direction of travel is not all positive. And look, there's what we have to put in at every single election. The registers are still in a dreadful mess. We know that the Electoral Commission are really improving access to the register. So a lot of people who should be on the register and weren't are now getting onto the register. But that process on the other slide of taking people off is much slower. Mm. You know, anyone who wants to vote should be able to vote. Mm. But really, in the next 3 or 5 years, we have to see much more effort at taking people off the register. If they immigrate, if they pass away, you know, this does need to be looked at more seriously.
Anything else you would be advising News Talk Daily listeners, the election nerds out there like you and I, to be watching out for over the next couple of weeks?
I mean, I think the polls will get very interesting as we get closer to the election. And it's something just keep in mind. A lot of these candidates are relatively unknown, even to political nerds. Like, they're not the Taoiseach or the leader of the opposition. We don't see them every day. So they're going to be introducing themselves to the voters. Each day, each new piece of information may kind of reinforce your existing opinion or cause you to change your mind, because we're coming from a fairly blank slate. So this will be quite a volatile election. And I think definitely focusing in on the last week and what the polls are saying, what the direction of travel is and what the feeling is on the ground. I wouldn't make any predictions at this stage.
No, it is definitely all to play for. And you and I will be watching every single minute of it. Teresa Reedy, thank you so much for joining us here on News Talk Daily and bringing us all of your insights and your expertise. Hopefully we'll speak to you again before the 24th of October.
Absolutely delighted.
Well, there'll be lots of presidential coverage across News Talk and the Go Loud Network over the coming weeks. Do keep an eye on the website newstalk.com and our Instagram at newstalkfm for more details. Well, that's it from the podcast for today. Thanks, as always, for your company. Until tomorrow, goodbye.